It has been said many times that only two things in life are assured, death and taxes. And we will not be talking about taxes today. So that leaves the other sure thing and an exploration of our attitudes toward death. It's been pointed out many times that Americans don't like to talk about death much. Today's guests think a discussion is necessary to appreciate life better. Marilyn Schlitz is co-executive producer with Deepak Chopra of the documentary film Death Makes Life Possible. It will be shown in Mount Shasta, Redding, and Ashland over the next 2 weeks. We'll give more specific times and places coming up. And our other guest, Jennifer Matthews, will host those screenings. Marilyn Schlitz, welcome to you.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
It's good to have you. Jennifer Matthews, welcome to you.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Good to be here.
Marilyn, let's start with your work. I've listed you as a psychologist and anthropologist. I'm probably selling you a little short.
Well, I'm not a psychologist, but I am an anthropologist, and I have a strong interest in culture and how that informs how we live our lives.
And what led to the creation of the movie?
Well, I think this is a topic whose time has come, and we, as a culture, have a tremendous amount of fear. Death is a big taboo, and I think it was clear to us that it was time for us to help transform that fear into an inspiration for living and dying well.
And what were some of the approaches you took? I mean, it's a big subject, obviously. Sort of like, you know, taking on the subjects of life and death in a movie. You could go in a bunch of different directions.
That's true. And trying to nail it down, maybe we were pretty broad. But it's got a strong kind of cultural orientation. Our interest was really looking at different worldviews and belief systems around death and around the afterlife. So what is it that informs our perspective on what comes next, and how does that influence, you know, our experiences every day?
And Jennifer Matthews, what motivated you to the project, to get involved in it, and to act as a host for these screenings?
Well, I had my own personal experience with losing a loved one. My life partner had died in 2011, and since then, really, my passion has been helping people look at death differently and sharing that it's possible to really explore these issues, find inner peace no matter what the external circumstances. So for the past few years, I've primarily focused on writing about my own experiences and also having conversations about the issues, which is how I got involved in more of the educational aspects of Death Makes Life Possible and really encouraging people to have these discussions.
Dealing with death on your own, you certainly discover how you think and feel about it. But did you gain just a much greater understanding of the way society in general responds to death?
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the biggest learnings I had, and that has been a big inspiration for me. I think there's been so many people have an adversarial relationship with death and a struggle, and also make assumptions that it must be extremely difficult to deal with, and of course, it is a big process of really being able to let go and release and process and adapt to a big change in our lives. But the belief systems that we have, which are often subtle, I think really influence our experiences. And I'd like to open that up for people, to really allow people to explore different perspectives. And I think the film does a beautiful job of exploring what might exist beyond the body, and at the same time reminding us that death is something that can give us perspective on what it's like to be alive. And most people, I think, look at it as a tragedy only and forget that death is part of the cycle of life, and the movie really addresses that.
In fact, there's a quote in here somewhere. I forget whether it's in the movie or not, Marilyn Schlitz, but Deepak Chopra is saying that that death is not the opposite of life, it's the opposite of birth.
That's right. I mean, we live in a cycle of life, and we are part of, you know, a larger story. And to the extent we can make peace with our own mortality and really address the qualities that come from being alive, and I think Jennifer really addressed beautifully the role of something like grief, people have a very hard time dealing with loss. I think there's a fear of the unknown. And to the extent we can liberate that conversation and invite people to really reflect on their own beliefs and worldviews, I think it can be very helpful in, you know, tackling grief and tackling the empowerment that comes when we understand that we are part of a larger cycle.
how universal is the American sense of taboo about death? I mean, are other cultures just a lot more aware and embracing of it? I mean, it seems to me that when we see pictures of people grieving in other countries, we think, wow, these people are really over the top with their grief, but maybe they're processing a whole lot better than we are. As an anthropologist, how universal is this taboo about death?
Well, you know, people do process differently, that's for sure, and there are different ways in which cultures consider the process of grief. But my experience is that this taboo is pretty widespread. Right now, the film has been across the world, and it's being translated into Chinese, Japanese, Germany today. And what we're finding is that even in cultures where, you know, we would have thought there was a greater sense of comfort around death, there's still a lot of fear. And so I think that this is a universal campaign, really, to help excite people's curiosity about what comes next and to engage in conversations in a way that really opens us to other people's points of view.
The way that the film is presented at small local screenings is the idea that, I mean, when you talk about it in terms of a campaign, it really does seem to be arranged that way, that you want to engender discussions by showing of the film.
We do. We are really encouraging people to do community viewings. We are very excited to have collaborations with people like Jennifer, who have really seen the potentials of this film and want to bring it into their communities, want to bring it into their organizations. Obviously, this has a lot of implications for hospice and chaplaincy and nursing and retirement communities. So we're trying to get it out there.
Coming to Mount Shasta March 3rd, Reading March 7th, Ashland March 12th. We'll get further details after the break. We'll talk more with Marilyn Schlitz, the co-executive producer of Death Makes Life Possible, the documentary film. Jennifer Matthews is hosting the upcoming screenings. We'll come back and talk with the two of them and take your phone calls and emails. Let's talk about death in a positive way. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks so much for listening. We're talking today about death on the Jefferson Exchange in the context of the documentary film Death Makes Life Possible, co-produced by Deepak Chopra and Marilyn Schlitz. Marilyn is one of our guests here on the Jefferson Exchange, along with Jennifer Matthews, who'll be hosting upcoming screenings of the film in Mount Shasta, Reading, and Ashland. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the subject matter of the film and much more broadly about death and our attitudes about death. Join us on the Exchange by calling 800-838-3760 anywhere in our listening area, 800-838-3760. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Marilyn, can you give us some more details, times and places on the upcoming screenings? Not Marilyn, I'm sorry, Jennifer.
I think Jennifer has the
sure.
list, and I will turn it over to her.
All right.
Will do. Thanks very much. So on Tuesday, March 3rd, it'll be showing in Mount Shasta at the Sisson Museum, and the tickets for that are at Village Books. On Saturday, March 7th, in Reading at the Center for Spiritual Living, and you can get tickets at the center. And on Thursday, March 12th, in Ashland at the Havara Synagogue, and tickets are at the Music Coop. People can also go to deathmakeslifepossible.com, and up at the top, it says local screenings. And all the information's there, and you can also buy tickets online for any of the screenings there. They all start at 7 o'clock. All of them will be followed by a discussion, and a portion of proceeds will benefit local nonprofit hospice organizations.
How long is the film itself?
It's 63 minutes.
Pardon me?
It's 63 minutes.
63 minutes. Okay, it's just a little hair over an hour. Okay,
okay.
So lots of time for discussion afterwards. And Marilyn, how much did you take this around to let people see it in sort of a rough cut version that might have led to any tweaks or final edits?
Oh, we took it around a lot before we actually nailed it. And in fact, we're doing another edit right now just to tighten it a little bit more. So it's, I don't know, what do they say? You know, you're not finished until it's the absolute drop-dead deadline. And I think that's true of a film as well as life.
Have you made other films before?
I've done a couple of documentaries, but nothing with this kind of production value. So we're really excited. It's kind of a maiden voyage.
Were there specific incidents, either for you or for Deepak Chopra, that I don't know where I wrote this quote down from, but we got death all wrong is what I have here, and I don't know if that comes from either one of you.
Well, my kind of calling in this, I think, came before I even remember. As an 18-month-old, inquisitive, precocious toddler, I was exploring the world, and the way a good toddler does, I empirically was testing things, including a can of lighter fluid that my father had inadvertently left on a table. And by putting that into my mouth, it led me to 3 months in and out of intensive care. And so while I don't remember what happened there, I think there were some seeds that were planted in my unconscious around this kind of semi-permeable area between living and dying. And then later, when I was about 16, I was in a pretty serious motorcycle accident. And at that time, my body was thrown from the motorcycle. And I vividly remember watching my body tumbling through the air. So this was kind of a classic out-of-body experience. And what that suggested to me at the time was that our consciousness and our identity may be something more than just our physical being. And that led me into decades of research and inquiry. I started doing interviews around the transformative nature of death and our death awareness probably 20, 30 years ago, honestly. So it's been a long time in coming. The actual production of the film was about 2 years.
So is the main thrust of the film that we stop thinking about ourselves as our bodies, that there's more to us than just what's here physically?
I think the main thrust of the film is to invite you to question that. I don't want to, conclude anything, because I think that there are many different worldviews, many different belief systems. My goal is really to honor the diversity of different perspectives and just invite people to be curious, because when they think about their worldview, it's something implicit. We don't often think about the fact that everything we perceive about life is filtered through this lens of perception, which is our worldview. And that's influenced by our culture, our families, our religion, our education. And so just helping people to become more aware of what they're not aware of, and in particular, to bring this kind of awareness to death and what we think will happen next.
We had a couple of questions dropped off by Michael in Mendocino, who wants to know what new concepts you bring to the discussion on death in Death Makes Life Possible. And he also wants to add that hearing about this reminds him a lot about the book by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Yes. I also have a book that will be coming out in May through Sounds True with the same title, Death Makes Life Possible. And in that, I really do deal with this idea of what's called terror management theory. There was an anthropologist by the name of Ernest Becker who wrote a great book called The Denial of Death. And in that book, he started a conversation, won a Pulitzer for it. And he basically argues that we have this unconscious terror that informs all these kind of maladaptive behaviors. And a group of social psychologists picked up that thread and began doing empirical research to look at the ways in which this kind of death denial leads to all kinds of problems in society. And in particular, the idea that when we are triggered, and if we have not dealt with our own fears in a healthy way, what happens is that we become very insulated. We become very protective of our in-group, that group that shares our value system, and we can become very aggressive toward the out-group. And if we look around right now and see the kind of global conflicts we're facing as a civilization, I think this idea of, terror management theory and death awareness can be a very powerful tool for us as we try to, create a more peaceful, loving world.
It's coincidental and interesting that we have you in the same week that we talked to David Miller about his book about PTSD, The Evil Hours, because a couple of things in the book that he points out is one is that it's really hard to go on living when you come so close to death. And the other one is this sense of a, like a national PTSD that he cites another author in talking about that we've been so afraid by terrorism. And I know it's not quite exactly what you meant with the terror just now, but that we fear so much that we make it hard for ourselves to live.
Well, I think that's true and not true. I guess I would say that in the film and in the book, we interview a number of people who have come very close to death, a near-death experience, out-of-body loss, grief. And what we find is that if approached with this kind of mindfulness, can help people to live more fully. So it can help us to value each and every moment with a greater sense of authenticity. And at the same time, I do think that there are really important insights about terrorism, about the reasons that we become so immobilized around this kind of threat. And I think this is an opportunity for all of us, again, engaging in this conversation. How do we invite people to really come with an open heart and an open mind to, you know, understand and appreciate other people's points of view?
Do people need to understand the work that you do and that Deepak Chopra does to be able to appreciate the film? Do they need to know what noetic science is, for example?
Oh, I don't think so. Deepak likes to say this film is for anyone who's going to die, which gives us a pretty big demographic.
It does indeed. The film is called Death Makes Life Possible. Marilyn Schlitz is with us. She's an anthropologist and the co-executive producer of the film with Deepak Chopra. Jennifer Matthews is hosting upcoming screenings of the film. Again, those are March 3rd in Mount Shasta, March 7th in Reading, and March 12th in Ashland, all at 7 p.m. Lots of comments and questions are welcome to be heard here on the program. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Anna Eugene has just used that email address, and she writes, this is Anna Grants Pass. She says, I was wondering if your guest knows about the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. I found it fascinating and do believe the wonderful perspective told here. It helped me with the death of my dear ones. I'm not afraid of death, only the way we die in our society. From Anna Grants
Pass. That's a great point. Yes, that's a wonderful book. Very sweet story. And I think what that question leads us to is an appreciation for the fact that if we don't have the conversation, if we're not willing to open ourselves to the inevitability of our own mortality, then those last days or moments of our life may not be spent the way we want them to. And so I think it's really important that people can find ways to have the conversation and recognize that, you know, it's not as scary as they think. One of the things we're doing right now is taking this film into retirement communities and inviting people over a period of 10 episodes or segments to engage in different pieces of the movie and then, through this kind of facilitation process, really explore their own worldviews and belief systems around death.
Well, you mentioned some people have had near-death experiences in the film, and I also noticed in the trailer that you're actually, there's some analysis of what goes on in the brains of mediums. Was there anything conclusive in that particular area?
Well, that's fascinating. You know, people go to see these mediums who they believe can help them communicate with their departed loved ones. And this study that was done at the Institute of Noetic Sciences was really looking at what happens in the brains of these mediums. And, you know, is it definitive? No. But is it provocative? Yes. It seems as though the kind of memory area of the brain, when this person believes they're communicating with the departed, seems to kind of clear out. It's as though the memories that I have as this living agent kind of open up and provide space for another set of memories to come in. And so this is, you know, obviously something that's going to lead to more research and, you know, invites in another tool for dealing with grief. I think people can find a great deal of comfort in having these kinds of communications. Whether they're ontologically true, is it, you know, reality that the spirit is speaking through the medium? We don't really know, but what we do know is that people who have these kinds of encounters feel comforted, and that is an important vehicle for reducing the suffering.
Jennifer Matthews, you mentioned a loss, losing your life partner 4 years ago, and looking for some help, some answers, some solace after that. You have seen the whole film, haven't you?
Absolutely, many times, yes.
Okay. So was it the kind of thing that just went voom at you, that it was so different from everything else that you had seen or heard or experienced in the ways of talking about death up until that time?
Well, I think for me it just opened up so many different possibilities, and it was very much in alignment and resonance with a lot of what I was already experiencing. The ideas that the questions of being curious about what does happen after we die and exploring that, as Marilyn said, through various worldviews and spiritual traditions. So the ideas that relationships can continue perhaps after someone we love dies, which has been my experience, or for example, there's one speaker in the film who has cancer, and he says something about how people think if you're okay with death, that you've given up or that you've lost your will to live. And I had this experience when my life partner was in her dying process, that she was actually in deep acceptance, just like Lee, the speaker in the film, that she would die soon. And my experience wasn't at all that she was losing her will to live or giving up, but rather just like Lee, that she had this deep inner knowing that everything would be okay no matter what, whether her physical body survived or not. And so that was very inspiring to me to see that reflected in this film, when we rarely talk about that. Usually it's survival at all costs of the body. But what if we actually relax into that and are okay with death? And as Marilyn had said, that maybe it's not as scary as we think. So those are the pieces that really deeply resonated, that I felt compelled to be sharing this film with other people and really get the conversation opened up even more widely.
And Jennifer, that could be a fairly nuanced approach, I'm thinking, because you know, we do tend to be black and white thinkers, I think, largely across American society. And so it's hard to get the point across. It's like, okay, I accept the fact that I'm going to die. I'm not welcoming it. I like living. I do. But I am aware that this is going to happen.
And both can be true. Exactly. You can hold both at the same time, I believe.
All right. So Marilyn Schlitz, in the process of pulling in all the volumes of information, and this easily could have been 63 hours, let alone 63 minutes. So when you're looking at traditions, for example, when we talk about spiritual traditions, as Jennifer just was, are there any spiritual traditions that don't believe in an afterlife? Because it seems like generally any belief in some ongoing of the spirit is attached to some set of spiritual beliefs.
Well, there again, you know, you mentioned the nuance of these things. It's sometimes subtle. One of the things I enjoyed learning about was the Islamic view, where this is actually death, this mundane experience, and that what comes after is life. And so it's an inversion of what, you know, certainly in the Western world we consider to be life and death is inverted. I found that very interesting, comforting. I spent time in the Ecuadorian Amazon with some native peoples, the Achuar, and they believe that, you know, what we experience every day, this mundane reality, is really the dream. And it's when our soul leaves the body at night and travels into the spirit world that we're truly alive. And so, again, there are different cultural lenses that bring perspective to, you know, who are we? What is our identity? I think one of the things that Deepak shares in the film is this idea that we will lose our fear. The way we have conquest over death is to understand who we really are. And if who we really are is something more than just our material physical being, then that opens up many possibilities for what may come after.
The sense that that you can actually be more by not being in a physical corporeal form.
And that we are more. And what we're discovering through, you know, advances in quantum physics, for example, is that, you know, we are interconnected, interrelated, you know, beings that are more expansive than just this ego identification that we have within this body. So it's exciting to see what's happening at the convergence point between these different spiritual and religious traditions and then what we're learning from modern physics. And I think we're living in the middle of a paradigm shift, and new understandings of our human potential, of our interconnectedness as a species, will open us to a whole new level of understanding.
What's that physics connection you mentioned?
Well, I think we see that in, you know, people talking, for example, Stuart Hameroff, who's an anesthesiologist at the University of Arizona, talks about the quantum soul and the idea that perhaps our consciousness is in some ways a quantum process, in which case it is non-local. It's not connected just to our brain. Our brain may be like the radio receiver that gets the signals, but our consciousness and our identity may be beyond the radio. And so this is, you know, again, it may be metaphorical at this point, but it's provocative.
Absolutely. A lot more to talk about life and death, and the documentary film Death Makes Life Possible, for which Marilyn Schlitz, you just heard, is the co-executive producer with Deepak Chopra. Jennifer Matthews is hosting upcoming screenings of the film in Mount Shasta, Redding, and Ashland. We'll get more specifics on those again after the break. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll take your phone calls and emails for Marilyn and Jennifer when we return in a minute 15. Final segment on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening to us on this Friday. We are talking about the documentary film Death Makes Life Possible. It is a film, and there's a book coming out this spring as well. Marilyn Schlitz is the co-executive producer with Deepak Chopra of the film and the author of the book. Jennifer Matthews is hosting upcoming screenings of the film in Mount Shasta on March 3rd at the Sisson Museum, in Redding on March 7th at the Center for Spiritual Living, in Ashland on March 12th at the Havra Shir Hadash Synagogue, all at 7 in the evening. You can join the discussion here and now on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about death and what it means to us and how we might actually make more out of life by understanding a bit more about death. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I was reminded when we were talking about physics getting into this discussion, Marilyn Schlitz, that there was at least one physician who believed that the soul actually weighed 7 pounds or 21 ounces or something like that. We're not getting into that level of things, are we?
No. You know, it's funny. I was kind of the inspirational character for Dan Brown's book, The Lost Symbol, and he talks about that particular experiment. And, you know, to the best of my ability, I don't think that there's really good evidence that the soul weighs a certain amount. I think that that's kind of confusing the issue.
Mm-hmm. In the exploration of many religious and spiritual traditions and how they view death, was there any that you've discovered either in your work as an anthropologist or in the work on this film that is radically different from everybody else's, just a whole different way of looking at death?
Well, like I mentioned, the Islamic view, you know, the atheist view is very interesting, and I think it represents a very large segment of the population. And this is the idea, really, that when you're dead, you're dead, you're done, there's nothing. And so in that worldview, it's also important to find peace with our understanding of mortality. And I think in that process, we interview Michael Shermer, for example, in the film, who is, you know, the head of the Skeptic Society. And, you know, even...
Didn't he write The Moral Arc?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, we have him on next week.
Oh,
funny.
That's fantastic. Well, he's very articulate, very charming, and very insightful. And so, again, my perspective is to really honor the diversity of positions and to learn what I can from each of those different voices. And I think, Michael, it would be interesting for you to ask him about his own experience. But he had kind of a transformation recently where in the process of getting married, they started hearing music coming out of a room off to the side. And after the ceremony was done, they went in and they found that there was a radio that his wife's grandfather had given them and that he had tried to fix you know, on numerous occasions in the past, months before, and that suddenly during the ceremony this radio comes on. And what that said to Michael's wife is that her grandfather was connecting to her, and she felt him being part of the ceremony. And so it's very interesting to hear Michael talk about that experience within his worldview of materialism. And I think it has caused him to pause and reflect.
We'll have to ask him about that. We have some phone calls here. Let's go to Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Death Makes Life Possible with Marilyn Schlitz and Jennifer Matthews.
Thank you guys for taking this on, first of all. I tend to subscribe to the Buddhists. I think the Buddhists are the closest to having it right. No one can possibly know what goes on after the process of death concludes. The key to me personally, and the suggestion I would make to other people, is the concept of no attachment. I'm not attached to this life to the extent that many other people are. I'm not attached to living or dying. It's really quite meaningless. As the Buddha said, supposedly on his death, all compounded things are impermanent and subject to dissolution, and that should offer a lot of comfort and solace from that perspective. And I guess that's primarily my comment. It's just not a big deal.
Hmm.
That's a beautiful philosophy, and I thank you for bringing it into the conversation. It's true that as we meditate on our impermanence and on the continuous nature of our transformation, that death becomes just another part of the process. And as we can move from that kind of clinging attachment to a sense of, you know, comfort in the not knowing and in the being moment by moment, I think people can move away from suffering, and that's a beautiful gift.
Let's take another call. Here is Terry and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Marilyn Schlitz and Jennifer Matthews.
Hello. Are you there?
Yep, that's you.
Okay. I just wondered if there was going to be a film showing in Eugene and also when the book was coming out.
All right. Good questions, both. Thanks for those, Terry. Any awareness from either of you? Yeah, Jennifer?
I am considering doing a screening in Eugene, so we will see if that comes. So keep your eyes open on that one.
I see. There was one in Portland 2 days ago.
I'm sorry. So we invite people to go to deathmakeslifepossible.com, the website, and we keep a calendar of events there so people can check that out. And we're also inviting people to show the film. So community viewings are available, and again, the information is on the Death Makes Life Possible website. And the book will be out in May, and I invite you to stay tuned. And we just learned yesterday that the film will be shown. It will do its North American television premiere on Oprah Network, so we're excited about that, too.
Any idea when that will be?
Well, they're talking about the fourth quarter of this year, but that hasn't been nailed down yet.
All right. The film in its original form, the one that's showing now, has been out for 2 years almost. Is that right?
No, we did the world premiere in June of last year in Sedona, Arizona, and now it has been all over the world. It's a beautiful thing. It's been on, you know, it's been through Asia, Europe, South America. I would love to see some people showing it in Africa. We'd love to get feedback on the Facebook page about what people are doing with the film and how they're engaging with it. We really do think that this is about a global conversation.
Speaking of conversations, Jennifer Matthews, in the many times that you've seen Death Makes Life Possible, was it always in small private groups? Have you been to some of these screenings with discussions?
I've held screenings before, just a few, and so we've had discussions at those, and also just having conversations with friends and people I know, it's been really powerful.
I'm curious to know if in the process of discussions, there's always like, if the first question is always the same.
The first question, that hasn't been my experience. Marilyn can speak more to that, but I think there is just a real openness. There are so many ways that people can go with this film, and that's one of the things I really love about it, is it's a conversation starter. And we can go in many, many directions to have the conversation from there. So
I think it gives people an opportunity to share their own experiences. If somebody has been a caretaker and been with somebody at the moment of death, you know, they will often want to share a story or an experience that they've had. And we know now, too, that there are these experiences that people have at the point of death. We interview Dr. Peter Fenwick in the movie, who has made a study of this. And, you know, oftentimes people will, you know, sit up and begin a conversation with these, you know, spirits. And this is a very common experience that people have. And so when we do these showings and the screenings around, you know, different places all over the world, you know, people then have an opportunity to think about something that maybe they've never shared with someone before. It's very common for somebody to say, I've never told anybody this before, but... Mm-hmm. And that's the moment when the little tingles go up the back of my neck and I get excited that we have provided a safe place for people to share experiences that they haven't felt able to do before.
Do you get that pretty much at every showing? Somebody says something like that?
Pretty much, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's been my experience.
We have another call here from Al in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Marilyn Schlitz and Jennifer Matthews.
Thank you for taking my call. I thought I would throw in, a saying by the Sufi, who are the mystic of Islam, where they say you die before you die so you can live forever or eternally. And also, I have met people, they're friends actually, who through meditation and a spiritual path for years, they come to what they called the death of the ego, where they experience kind of death. And I know them before and after, and the interesting thing, they are different, but they are the same. And I thought I would throw that in.
All right. Thanks for that, Al. Appreciate it.
That's a beautiful comment. I love the Sufi tradition, and in the book, I describe a crane dance, which came out of Turkey, and a Sufi master that I interviewed. And it's a beautiful dance where there is this sense of connection between heaven and earth. And so the arms extend up and down, and we are in that intermediate place. So the Sufis do have a lot of beautiful practices, as do many of the religious traditions around death awareness. And I also appreciate the caller's, you know, observation about the death of the ego. What we need to understand is that we need a healthy ego in order to, you know, function well in our lives. But there's also a way in which we can transcend that narcissistic ego and be willing to surrender to the great mystery. And I think the Sufi mystics, as well as others, really have put their finger on that, and it's a great gift.
It seems like part of accepting the inevitability of death is accepting that you don't have control over every last thing in your life. So that's a big one.
Doesn't that really speak to all of us?
Yeah. I'm curious. I have a suspicion about the demographics of the groups that come to see the showings of the film, Marilyn. What can you tell us about who tends to show up?
Well, we know that the boomers are, you know, coming of age, and we have, as a population, wanted to do things differently, you know, and so I think that is informing this upspringing of different approaches to death, whether it's death cafes or death salons or dining with death or death, you know, green burials. All of this stuff is up and has been sort of a new emergent form in the last couple of years. And I think it's very much influenced by the boomers. And, you know, not only are they dealing with their own mortality, but oftentimes they're caregivers. And so they're, you know, really in a certain sense being forced to consider their own worldview, to embrace the potentials for personal and collective transformation. And I think, you know, this group, as we are the, you know, the gray tsunami, as they're talking about, can own our power. I think we can help to really change the culture of the way, you know, Jennifer talked about the heroics of medicine at the end of life. Well, oftentimes that comes with a tremendous amount of suffering. As we can gain a greater awareness of our own mortality and comfort in knowing that, you know, we will go and we can do this in a way that is graceful, I think that is a healing for people, and it's also the potential to heal medicine as we know it today.
Jennifer, I wonder if, as somebody who has seen Death Makes Life Possible many times, if you have to restrain yourself when you see it again with audiences, you know, and not want to tap people on the shoulder, go, watch this, coming up.
Sure. Well, it's really interesting to watch, just to be a part of that community experience together and to watch people's energy and to see what people respond to in different ways. And I, every time I've seen it, I have learned something new and seen a nuance or a different piece that maybe I didn't notice as much before. So it's been wonderful to actually watch it multiple times.
For me, I like to sit at the back of the room and count the laughs. So that may surprise people, mm-hmm. but we've brought a lot of humor into the film, interviews with kids who have this, you know, amazing authenticity about their relationship to death and their honesty. Or, you know, we have Monty Python in there when death comes to dinner. And so, you know, it's trying to lighten up the conversation a little bit as well.
So, all right. So, again, the showings that are coming up with community screenings of Death Makes Life Possible: Mount Shasta at the Sisson Museum on March 3rd, Reading at the Center for Spiritual Living on March 7th, and Ashland at Havarah Shir Hadash on March 12th. All of those start at 7 p.m. Jennifer Matthews, you mentioned tickets. Is there a cost here?
Yes, for the Mount Shasta showing, it is $10 in advance and $15 at the door, and because it's my hometown, I must say. And then for Reading and Ashland, it's $15 in advance and $20 at the door. And again, a portion of proceeds go to local hospice organizations.
All right, all at deathmakeslifepossible.com. Links from our website at jeffexchange.org. Marilyn Schlitz, anthropologist and co-executive producer with Deepak Chopra. Jennifer Matthews, hosting the showings. Thank you both so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having us.
All right.
Thanks so much, Jeff.